Okay, good evening, and welcome to a special board meeting. If I can ask Sarah to take the roll call, please.
President Aducey?
Here.
Trustee Gibbs?
Here.
Trustee Hennig?
Here.
Trustee Conti?
Here.
Trustee Vasquez?
Exactly.
Absent. Trustee Cargi?
Cargi, here.
Cargi, excuse me. Trustee Corsini?
Here.
All right, very good. Well, welcome, everybody. We've got a house full of people. No, no. We do have a house full of staff people.
A captive.
I'm happy that they're here.
Captive house.
Captain and audience. All right, so we're going to hand it over to Village Administrator Eric Palm, and Russ just walked in, to review with us the five-year capital improvement plan.
Correct. Thank you. Good evening, everyone. Thanks for coming out on a what plans to be an interesting week of weather.
Yep.
Reinforces why these capital needs are so important to our organization. Good night,
Some
folks. All right. Yeah, snowplows. We'll be talking a little bit about that. Mark, it's Mark. Oh, Mark. I saw Mark sat down. Someone poke Mark and make sure he's still awake. All right.
When he came to work, he didn't have a beer.
Right.
5 o'clock shadow.
Right.
I think it's more than that.
Yeah.
You got a full blown.
9 o'clock. Introduction. So, again, why do we do this? This is our five-year outlook for the village's capital needs. We do focus on the next year coming up in this presentation. We look at ins and outs, right? So where's the money coming from and what are we spending it on? Obviously, a very transparent document. We update this every year, fully reviewable by residents. GFOA looks at this and spends a lot of time on this as we have our discussion about our GFOA budgeting award. And also very important, and hopefully we get to a point again when we decide to issue debt at some point, bonding rating agencies will also look at this to make sure that from a financial standpoint you have your house in order and you've got a plan in place to handle major projects such as these. And again, it's always important to remember this is just the plan, right? This isn't, you're not voting for authorization of dollars. That comes in the budget process. This is just the game plan of what we want to do and where we want to spend our dollars. Then, assuming that you concur with what we presented tonight, we then go back and try to wrap as much of that into our budget presentation as possible. I won't go through each of those acronyms, but they are here, and of course at any point we get, as a staff, get used to dealing with these acronyms on a day-in and day-out basis, so at any point during the presentation you're like, what is the IIBF? We can go back and tell you it's the Infrastructure Improvement Bond Fund, so this is our little cheat sheet that we like to go back to in terms of our terminology. And that delves into our project categories. We look at things, and then we'll talk about this here in our presentation, from building and improvements all the way down to our water and sewer improvements. And then we have all of our different funding sources on the right-hand side of the column there. Most of those have been stable throughout the years. We have added the IIBF in the last several years. So when we issue the money from the debt service extension base, those dollars go into that fund. All right, so let's dive into it. We'll take a look at facilities first. And we as you know, we have three main facilities, this building that we're in here now, our garage for public works, and then our pump station. Starting with Village Hall, one of the things we'll be looking to do is making some additional improvements on the energy efficiency side for lighting. And that will take the form of most of the exterior lighting for this building. The lights like in the parking lot, those are already upgraded to LED lights. But some of the other lights, as it relates to the building, will look to be upgraded. Garage improvements, we are in need of a new salt storage facility. And so that will cost us to the tune of about $50,000. Again, as you can imagine in this weather, that's why those are important. It allows us to keep, you know, 250 to 300 tons of salt on site for use by the public works crews. And then at the pump station, this is a continuation, and we anywhere you see an asterisk in the presentation, many times based on how projects start to take shape, they have to be carried over to a subsequent fiscal year. So this is one where we've had to spend a little bit more time on. We've actually been able to complete the plans to create the movement of the transformers out of the pump station pump station building where they currently reside, where we don't want them, to the exterior of the building. Those plans have wrapped up, and so now we will be getting ready to bid that work out here in the future. Chances are, though, that work won't be completed until after the fiscal year starts.
Okay. Can I ask a question on the, have you thought about, I know it's been talked about, the solar, you know, our whole solar plan. Is this, are you taking any of your facilities, and are we considering solar on any of these facilities in the five-year plan?
No, not at this time. Not to say that we couldn't, but there's nothing in this document that reflects that.
Okay. I would request, unless the trustee has a big issue about it, I think we should look at, you know, potentially putting some solar on some of our buildings, given that there are a lot of funding that is available for reimbursement of the solar panels as well. I know that the commission has done quite a bit of work on some of this, Tom. So, I mean, I don't have it off the top of my head, but I think there's...
I think I just sort of recall reading something about the heavy renewable.
Yeah, I mean, it's the Federal Fair, I can't remember the act, but there is an act that's still in existence that actually allows institutions like us to get reimbursed or abated money for solar. So I would request that we consider looking at it, certainly within our five-year plan.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if not 2020, but certainly something within 5 years. What do you guys think?
A quote and a savings estimate.
I think something like a transformer, though, is probably not, I mean, solar is probably not going to generate enough, and I don't know enough about this energy to be able to actually make that work. But
I'm not talking about the transfer. I'm just talking
in general.
I'm sorry, Carmelo. Okay. I'm talking about just general, like, I'm not saying. I have
no idea.
Not
a replacement.
If that would help.
Yeah, not a replacement, but an augment.
Yes,
Okay, yep, we can do that. Absolutely.
Can I ask a question along those lines?
Yep.
Mark, is there any place that we could do that?
Yes.
Okay.
What, you don't believe what I'm saying?
No. I don't know. I mean, some of the stuff that we have is such high voltage, I don't know if solar can address stuff like that. That's the only reason I'm getting at it.
I get you.
Yes.
No windmills. No solar panels.
No.
And they're not as bulky, and they're, you know, the more streamlined. All right.
No, that was strictly a technical question as far as what kind of energy they produce, because I don't know.
Yes.
Yep.
Any energy that we produce in excess of what we use goes back into the grid and gets paid for that.
Right.
So solar was very expensive. It's coming down in price, and grants are becoming available. So, yes, we've actually been talking about that. That roof, when you go up there, it's a great space.
And recently repaired.
Finally.
So it can hold the silver. All right.
Yep.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Moving on to vehicles, we'll start with police. Not a unusual, but rather customary request to replace two of our squads. And again, looking at those costs, keep in mind those are your all-in costs. So the vehicle, you know, somewhere in between $25,000-$30,000, maybe a little bit more. And then we have the cost of the markings, the cages, the equipment, the installation of all that equipment. So again, that those numbers you see in front of you are your all-in costs. And it's also important, in addition to having a strong frontline set of squads that at this point are all, I believe, all-wheel drive now. We've eventually converted that, which obviously comes in handy with this type of weather. The police department does maintain a decent, what we'll call, secondary fleet. And so those are vehicles that are fully matured and depreciated, but we still hang on to those. So we only fund those frontline squads and fund those within the SURF, but once those move on to a secondary fleet, we still use those in all departments. Honestly, your administrative vehicles, police department, fire department, all has, public works has some of those. In fact, one of the discussions we had at this point is, you know, we've been hanging on to our the departments do a great job at maintaining their vehicles. We've been able to hang on to them a little bit longer. We've actually run into a situation where we don't have the hand-me-down vehicles like we used to. So at some point, we actually may come to you, make a mid-year request for actually maybe buying one or maybe two used vehicles for administrative purposes. We don't see the need necessarily to most towns, the play is to go out and just buy a new car. Some of the cars for the miles that we put on, which are insignificant, it may make sense to get something like, you know, coming off of a lease or maybe used by a rent-a-car company or something like that. So again, trying to be as creative as possible where we can be. So that's the police, the two cars for the police department. Fire department, there will be no vehicles for replacement for 2020. So that's an easy one. And then we have one pickup truck in the public works department. So this is a, and I give Mark and John a lot of credit. The cost of the international dump trucks, which are the big ones that you see out on the street, I mean, I remember I started, you know, I'm starting to date myself, but I mean, I remember those things being $115,000, $120,000. And I mean, what's an international dump these days? Right. Yeah. So they keep getting more and more in terms of cost. So what Mark and John have looked at is looking at the Ford F-450s and using that chassis with the dump and the plow on it as kind of that hybrid. So that's what you see here. Is of the $70,000. This is going to replace a regular pickup truck, which would be less than that. But what we've been able to do is kind of balance both ends. We've been able to not replace some of the bigger internationals and save some money. But then on the other end, where we've just had another pickup truck, we've been able to upgrade to somewhat balance out that fleet. And those vehicles become more versatile for the Public Works Department in events like this, where obviously a pickup truck can do some snow operations, but it's going to be confined more to alleys and maybe cul-de-sacs and small places like that. So, Mark, I don't know if there's anything else you want to add in terms of the versatility of that type of equipment. Okay.
Yeah, the salt would be that little bin in the back that you pulls like maybe 50 pounds of salt. Because obviously you can't put it in the back of the pickup truck, right?
No, there's...
Is this thing on?
Tell me it's the batteries again.
Okay, so there are various sizes of salt spreaders, anywhere from 1.5 cubic yards up to 6 cubic yards. So, and we have varying sizes. It can go in the back of a pickup truck, although it is very heavy. So it's better equipped for a Ford F-450 or 550 chassis. And then you'll see the large stainless steel ones running around in the large dump trucks. Those are the 6, 7 yard, 8 yard units. So they do come in various sizes. You have to match them to the chassis capacity.
Oops.
We do.
Yes. All right.
I might have missed this in the police vehicles, and I apologize, but there was a resident, a few of them actually, that called me and said they saw a pickup truck with police. Do we have a pickup truck for the police? I had no idea. And if we do, what do we pick up?
Green is go. We do not have a pickup truck, but what they're usually seeing is the Cook County Forest Preserve District Police or the Cook County Sheriff's Police or the Illinois Conservation Police that do spend some time in the area. They are known to go to the Forest Preserve District headquarters as far as the Illinois component. And both county agencies, Sheriff's Police and Forest Preserve Police, also have those pickups. And what we notice is some of the residents pick up on the green and that it says forest.
Yeah.
And so they only are picking up, not seeing river forest on there. But at this time, we do not have any pickup trucks within our fleet.
Good. That makes me feel good. And I'll make sure the resident understands the distinction. Thanks.
Sure.
All right. So that wraps up the vehicles. So moving on, we will move on to equipment, where we have a little bit more money allocated for expenditures for next year. And as always, when we go through these, there are some items that, again, are repeats and ones that you've seen in previous years that we essentially budget and allocate for in the event that equipment breaks. But if it continues to operate, we continue to use it. And so we'll have some of those discussions. And that leading right off, the first one is the overweight truck scales. And these are used by the police department, particularly when they're doing missions to find vehicles that are overweight, that their load that they're carrying exceeds their maximum capacity. And so, again, the ones we use right now currently work. They're old, but they're getting the job done, and they've been able to be recertified by the state each year. So we'll continue to use those. If at some point they eventually kind of give out, then we do have the money allocated to replace those.
Do we check trucks on Lake Street? Because I'm intrigued. I've never seen a truck get pulled over to be weighed.
Yes, we're limited, though, in our truck enforcement compared to some of the county or state agencies that under state law are allowed to do a lot more what they refer to as vehicle inspections. There was some language carved out to benefit those agencies. So during what we call the changeover of plates each year, in July, you see additional truck enforcement outside of the normal enforcement. We have a couple officers on each shift that are trained as truck enforcement officers that utilize those scales. So whether it's Lake Street, Harlem, North Avenue, those are the bulk of the main roads that are looked at. But we can't have a what would be called a traditional truck enforcement program compared to the state and county agencies.
And for you there.
Next item are pole-mounted radar signs. And so as we become more aware of looking at avenues to calm traffic in the community, these are those signs that would be permanently fixed. So we have the speed trailers that we deploy. The police department deploys strategically in certain areas. Those things get a lot of use and are in frequent use. These would be the pole-mounted ones that would be permanent. We've experimented with some of those up at the Park and Greenfield area, as you know. So this would allow for six of those to be purchased, and they'd be a combination of solar-powered, so not the solar you were looking for, but you know, still solar, and some that are connected to electrical sources.
Can I just ask, what's the reasoning for doing both? Why wouldn't you just do all solar?
Working with our public works departments, at some of the locations, we don't get enough light source to fuel those solar cells, and they would have to be hardwired into the system.
Right.
And that's something, when we look at some of the locations as potential locations where we receive ongoing citizen complaints or accident data sort of drives the need of where these should be located. We work with our partners in the Public Works Department to identify those areas.
Also, it's your fault.
The next item, and we'll see this on the fire side as well, we've spent some time this year looking at our in-car and handheld radio situation. So most of the radios that are currently used by police and fire were given to us back in the late 2000s from Cook County, and so they were and the county had gotten funding from the federal government, and so we, along with many other municipalities, were fortunate enough to get a whole new brand new set of radios for both police and fire. So those radios are starting to get near to the end of their useful life, and so we're looking on a proactive basis to start to replace those. And we can certainly at some point have a whole separate discussion on radios and VHF versus UHF versus digital. And so what we've tried to do, though, in this presentation and what we're asking for next year is really narrow it down to not where we could see things going in the next 10, 20 years for radios, but what we really need today to ensure that our officers and our firefighters do have that front line of communication back to dispatch, back to their supervisors, and to their and to each other. And so what you'll see in here is a multi-year approach. If you look at the whole five-year plan, we're asking for about $17,000 in both police and fire in this year, and then additional amounts in subsequent years to replace those radios.
Would you replace them with other VHF, or is it digital, or what?
So the ones we're asking for the first year are VHF radios.
And we'll be replacing currently VHF with VHF?
Yes, okay. Correct. So some of them are straight single band, some of them can be dual band. We have ones that are, the ones from the county are dual band, right.
The future ones, just the county, I'm sorry, I might as well just hold it this way.
Yep.
Currently, the radios that Eric referred to earlier were dual band that came out after the new millennium. And they were great to us because they were free and they were about $8,500 a piece if we would have purchased them. So we really benefited from that county grant. There's no foreseeable future grants that the county is getting to deploy those radios out to the suburban municipalities. So those are dual band radios. Currently, we are on the VHF band, which is a single band radio, and that's what we're trying to shore up our supply of VHF. And if you look towards year 4 and 5 of the plan, you'll see the inclusion of what's referred to now as the next technology, which is the tri-band radios, which includes the spectrum of VHF, UHF, and 800 technology. And this also includes digital capabilities, encryption, GPS, and a lot of features. As far as in the radio land, the future is really arriving over the next year or so. Does that answer your question?
All right, moving on, in terms of the street camera system, there's actually two parts to this. The first part is the addition of 3 new cameras into the Lake Street corridor, one at Central and Lathrop, one at Keystone and Lake, and then a second camera at Thatcher and Lake, where we've implemented a camera this year currently. So the police department's done a really good job in terms of building out that Lake Street camera system to the point where, with these additional cameras, we'll be in fairly good shape. One thing you'll see later on in the presentation and on the IT side of things is a study to really analyze other parts of the community and where we can expand the camera system. So one thing that we've learned going through this process is there is, it's not as simple as just putting up the camera. There's certainly a lot that goes into it and on the back end and the technology that goes with that to ensure these cameras work. And I think we've been able to create a good paradigm, a good process to roll these things out. But as we go to different parts of the community, whether that would be North Avenue, Harlem, Madison, we know there's going to be additional back-end work that's going to have to be done. So this is going to be, and we'll get to the study in a little bit, but the study will essentially look at two things. It'll look at the technology needs and then look at the data needs, right? So the IT consultant would be working with the police department to identify areas where we have high needs based on call volume, based on responses, based on incident, and then work to create the plan of rolling that out based on those priorities.
So how do you pick the locations, just out of curiosity? Like, why Keystone and Lake and not Park and Lake?
Basically, we work within a committee that includes our IT group. John's part of that, and also several members of the police department, where we're looking at areas of the town where we have the highest amount of vehicle traffic, pedestrian traffic in the area of our business districts, our school districts, our financial districts. And also, as you know, that area there serves our only metro or train station within the village, publicly owned parking lots, and areas where we've seen those that we've arrested in the past or those fleeing in and out of even other communities taking those routes. And we've been very successful, especially with the newer cameras and software. And it's not only benefited the River Forest Police Department, but all the towns around us, including Chicago, in taking criminals off the street or developing investigative leads. It's also given us the ability for situational awareness. On a day like this, anyone in the village can go look at, or I'm sorry, anyone of the village staff can go look at the cameras and see how kind of weather conditions are. The fire chief can monitor an area where the fire department is maybe.
So chief, I'm not questioning
that's okay.
The reason for it.
I'm sorry.
I think the
locations are sort of what
locations.
I stated in the beginning. It was sort of the areas that have been identified by staff.
Right.
Where there's increased sort of the high probability of someone may be coming in and out of town, or at the same time monitoring the areas within our business, financial, districts where it deserves that type of coverage that we've seen in other communities.
So you'll look at this on an annual basis? In other words, you talked about schools. I mean, I would think Park and Lake might be a good place, or Franklin and Lake could be a good place.
We have discussions, and actually we share now software, or the same software brand or company, with District 90, who's allowed us to view some of their cameras, and we're working currently on just some fine details on gaining more access or being able to use them sort of as a hub for us to add some additional cameras down the road. But as Eric mentioned, it's really going to be that study that's going to drive not only the locations but some of the costs connected to the back end and front end of this plan. They have a little more of a comprehensive strategic look at it.
Thank you. Okay.
All right, looking, switching gears and looking at the fire department, the first item, or first two items are carryovers. The first one is the air compressor that I think we've been carrying over ever since I've worked here. What's that?
When is that thing going to break?
I never, apparently, which is good. It's doing a great job. So that's the equipment that fills the self-contained breathing apparatus of the firefighters, make sure they have oxygen, air packs going on scene. So that continues to work, so we continue to roll that over. The second item is actually an item you're taking up tonight in terms of the alerting system that would replace the alerting system for the fire department, so all the speakers, and then it would actually transition to a digital system. So instead of actually being dispatched by a live person, they'll be actually be dispatched by a computer once a dispatch goes ahead, puts the call in, and then that'll get sent down to the department. So the one we have right now is broke. Well, not brush, and so strike that, take that back. Has reached the end of its useful life. It's been difficult to find replacement parts. We've been kind of jerry-rigging it along until we made a decision along with Westcom. So Westcom is approving their parts, pieces, and equipment on their end to make their upgrade, and then ours will go ahead and tie in with their system.
Is there an advantage of digital? I mean, I'm assuming as soon as the call comes into to the 9/11 center, they're just going to be able to call down, right? So there's no, is there a time lag currently?
It's not so much the time lag. What it'll be able to do is free up some resources on the dispatch side. So the way their system is structured is on a dispatch or call taker dispatcher system. So they won't need that dispatch. That person will be able to.
So it's not the call taker who's actually giving the call down.
Correct. Is that accurate, Kurt?
Yeah. Once they type the information in, as soon as they hit the button that it's ready to go, it automatically dispatches it instead of passing it to another dispatcher who would dispatch us. And also with the computer voice, it's a lot clearer over the speakers than sometimes the dispatchers forget to put their microphone down here and it's hard to hear, and you know, that delays us sometimes, but those are two primary reasons for it.
The fire department does a good job too in terms of, and I guess you would call it situational awareness of calls coming in. They monitor the calls downstairs. I know Chief Eckert had worked on putting in monitors so they can see all that traffic coming in. So if they do see something coming in for River Forest, they're able to run to the rig while the dispatcher is even still processing the call. So many times they're into the rig already when they get toned out, which really cuts down on the turnout time.
That'll be one of the other advantages of this, is it'll have a digital readout up at the front of the station. So as they're getting into the rig, they can read exactly where the address is and what type of call it is.
Is the information also available on the rig too, or it's just in the station?
It does. It comes over the rig onto the on the tablets through the MDT. So they have that information. There's additional information that comes over the tablets while they're going to the call.
And then the last item is the replacement of one of our defibrillators. So we currently maintain two defibrillators, one on the ambulance and one on the engine. Again, this is one of those items where when we get towards the end of our useful life, we proactively replace these. Unlike the air compressor, where we'll let that go, this is not something we decide to run the risk of this breaking down inadvertently. This is obviously a very important piece of equipment. And then again, moving along on the fire side, similar to the police department, we've allocated the same amount of money to purchase 5 replacement radios on the VHF band for the fire department. Okay, moving on to Public Works. First item is the chipper. Again, this is one of those carryover models, items, I should say, that we continue to move forward. The chipper that we have continues to work, continues to do what we needed to do, primarily used during any kind of in-house tree removal, tree trimming, and a lot of times during emergency storm damage and emergency storm cleanup. And so again, that continues to operate. Those are not insignificant pieces of equipment as it relates to their cost. As you can see at $90,000, a lot of that's attributable through the years to rightly some of the changes on the emission standards, but the counterbalance to that is driven up the cost of that. But again, that's an item we'll carry over. The second item, the flood barriers, is something I would commend Public Works on in terms of finding additional ways to protect the village in the event of an overland water event from the Des Plaines River. And so they've done, Mark and John have done a lot of research and looking at different options that are available that the community could purchase. And so we actually have a video that we're about to show you that show these in action.
No more sandbagging?
Well, we'll watch. Okay. I got a clip. Run the clip. And we'll go.
The barrier automatically unfolds with the arriving water. The top tarp lifts in proportion to the amount of water retained. The inner walls retain the bottom tarp and top sheet, keeping the barrier from tipping back and collapsing. When the flood recedes, the barrier will close itself up to be reused in many other operations.
So the idea here is this would be used in one or two places, one on Chicago Avenue, and then the other where we make that barrier. You've seen with the Jersey barriers to keep the river water from going into the residential neighborhood. And then a little bit over on Lake Street where the berm may end, and we've been working with the county to try to extend that even a little bit further. But those would be the two primary areas we would put it. Now, speaking with Mark, and we've talked to John, to me, this would be something that would, at least in the early stages, would be a redundancy for what we do already. I wouldn't go all in on this. The benefit of this, though, is that you can roll this out within, you know, 15, 30 minutes. So that flood wall goes up, you know, that could take an hour or two to, you know, get that thing put into place. The thing is, everyone, as the staff will tell you, one thing that gives me a little pause is is Mother Nature, right? And especially when it comes to flooding. And if we can build more redundancies to protect ourselves more, and honestly, the thing that gives me the most pause is just the volatility in our storms right now. So it's not, you know, the heavy thunderstorm that's dumping inches and inches of water in the community in a short amount of time is becoming more and more frequent. And so to have something in place that we could roll out within minutes as opposed to hours while we maybe were putting up the Jersey barrier wall, I think is something we need to explore and look at. So certainly we would have more conversations with the board on this before we pull the trigger, but this is something we'd be looking at for purchase.
I did just have a couple quick questions.
Yeah.
One being, do you know of any other towns already using them? And the other being, what happens after the fact in terms of having to, like, dry it out to make sure it doesn't deteriorate or rot with mold or whatever? You know what I mean?
Do you know of other towns, Mark? I mean, I've gone to different trade shows and I looked at different products. This one gets 5 feet high. So that video, it showed us a short barrier, but this gets up to 5 feet high. And there's other products we looked at that fill up with water that would take a lot longer to deploy. But we would have to air them out, you know, afterwards. But if they get wet, it's not going to be a problem because the whole point is the weight of the water gets on the bottom part of it, and then it fills up. And as long as that weight is holding it down, then it will protect.
No, I appreciate they can get wet. I just mean when they're not used. Sometimes, you know, put things away called wet.
Yeah, no, I think
we would. Public Works Department dry it out.
Yeah, we would dry it out and do the, you know, handle those normal things. The other one Mark's, or John's talking about was actually more of a, almost like a bladder system. Right.
Yeah, it was these tube containers that you fill with water, but we would have to use a hydrant and fill those up, and it would take a lot longer. So
plus some
that's why this was more appealing. Yeah.
Poked it.
So.
How long is each section, and how many sections would we need to buy?
So the Chicago Avenue section is 90 feet, and the Lake Street section is 110 feet, except the Lake Street section would only need to be 3 feet high. So we would have to buy two different sections.
They'd be 90 feet long?
Yes.
Yeah. You can put it on an arc, like you can put one of them on the sort of arc you make at Chicago?
Yeah. Yeah, we can put it right across Chicago with it.
Oh, you'd go, but it has to go straight from what I saw, right? You could.
Yeah, I don't think we would arc it or anything. I think we'd just go straight across.
Because that's the issue. Down Chicago, right? It's cool.
Yeah.
First,
Yeah. Yeah, you've talked to the actual design, the manufacturer, right? Right.
A French Canadian company, and I spoke to the engineer that designed it a number of years ago, and it's a good product. It's a product that was included in a study by the Army Corps of Engineers, very high ratings. We didn't pull the trigger at the time because it was expensive. It's come down in price some, and like Eric says, with the volatility of the weather and unpredictability, I think it's something we should invest in, just because we can deploy it so quickly. We don't have to rely on outside help. I can remember when we've had to solicit help from college students, and if you don't know you're going to get that help, it's a nerve-wracking situation to be in. And really, we should be able to respond to these using our own employees and not rely on outside help, you know, to make sure it gets done. And that's the whole idea behind something that's fast to deploy and dependable. So that's the idea behind this design.
So the cost is for two sets? Includes the two sets?
Right. Yep.
Does the Cook County Forest Preserve have any culpability in any of this? Would they participate, help, add one?
Their trees like water.
It seems like they would benefit. They would like be a benefit also somehow. Or they're the problem.
I don't know that they would. I have a hard time getting them to clean up trees. We have to clean up their mess. So, possibility, not a probability, a possibility.
Yeah, maybe. Sure.
We do have a.
Unlikely.
Yeah, we have a good relationship with the folks at Trailside. The people, just the folks who work there, have been good when we've had to take down signs or move things around. So they've been good to work with. But they're actually high. Their building's high enough up where they're usually in pretty good shape. The parking lot, as you well know, has seen better days. But we can certainly ask and try. We would always do that, but my.
So the Chicago Avenue part, that's actually their property right there, right? Or both of them.
Part state.
Yeah, I mean, it's part state and part theirs. I don't know where those. I don't know where their property specifically stops and ends, but they do. Yeah.
Mark, have you ever heard of like insurance companies, like helping out with the purchase of something like this?
I have not. No, I have not. Interesting idea, but I have not.
Yeah, that would be kind of neat to see if one of them wanted to experiment with us, you know, just to, because I'm sure, you know, they pay out millions of dollars every year for flooding, and ours is, our floods are pretty direct. They're in two particular places. It's not like a whole neighborhood goes down. They're very targeted. I don't know if I wouldn't know who to call, but
I mean, I'd be interested.
Like,
is it the insurance company with the most insured on the block, or
no? I don't know. I just don't. You know, it's something like that. You almost wonder if they would be interested in a program like this that would promote it.
They could sponsor it. We could put their name on the logo.
Yes.
Or vice versa.
State Farm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or if we purchase them, maybe we get a break on our insurance. I mean, that's how it normally works. If you put a fire or a police.
Right.
Yeah,
but
we'll try anything.
Play into the NAFIS. No, CRS, yeah.
Well, check it out, either way. Either we, the insurance will pay, or we get a break on our insurance if we put it in.
Okay.
Like a good neighbor.
I'm just interested, they might be interested in participating in a program like this.
Be interesting.
You know, it's good PR for them.
Call my insurance company.
You know, whoever made the joke about put their name on it, I wouldn't care if it had a giant State Farm logo on it, who cares?
Have them sponsor it.
The engineer that designed it was willing to come down here and demo.
Well, I think that's a demo.
The product. And we were actually gonna do it at a creek in Brookfields, I mean, Brookfield, so. He was willing to do that if we got enough communities together, so. Come down all the way from Canada.
Later. All right, moving on to information technology. We've got a couple items here that we will walk you through. Again, the first one we just talked about in terms of the strategic plan for the street camera system. Again, this is gonna look at deployment strategy for additional cameras, not only on the technology and the back end of things, but then on the police data side, right? Where are the areas that continue to make sense for us to have a camera presence? And so that we'll be working on that next year. And then in terms of just some general network improvements to Village Hall, we have a point-to-point connection we're going to make with Public Works to the tune of about $7,500, and the implementation of a records retention policy. And again, the key thing to point out here, it's not necessarily the creation of the policy, but taking the policy and giving that to IT, so it is basically programmed into our system. So most of that work will be the IT, the soft cost of the IT company programming the system to implement that policy. In terms of software upgrades, the first item is a land and license management software system. So we've recently completed a request for information to get more data and information from companies that provide software for building permits, land use, things of that nature. So, and I'll touch on that here in a second. The second item refers to the system upgrade for our ERP, which is Springbrook. So Springbrook is the company that we use, their software platform that handles our cash receipt system, budgeting, accounts payable, payroll, water billing, all those main core functions of the finance department are handled by Springbrook. Through the year, Springbrook's been acquired by another company. They still handle the day in, day out stuff pretty well. Some of the other things where we'd like them to do a better job, like the land and licensing and the building permits, is an area where they have not met our expectations. So we're looking at bringing in a third-party platform to handle that specializes in that area to do those things so we can provide not only improved customer service to the residents, but efficiencies to what we do here at Village Hall. That being said, so we have money set aside for the implementation of that software, and then the second part of that is starting to set some funds aside for replacement of the overall ERP. So those systems are not inexpensive. You know, the Village of Hinsdale just went through one. You know, by the time you buy the software, implement it, get a consultant to help you, you know, it's easily $500,000. And so if we ever have to go down that road, which we might have to at some point, depending, you know, the other challenge with these systems is it's not only what you want to do. These companies get bought and sold. Sometimes they stop putting R&D and resources into developing the resource. So we would never want to be in a situation where we're kind of caught off guard and we're forced into making the decision either without having at least some money set aside for that. Mm-hmm. The third item relates to a gap analysis that we're going to do on our records management system. So LaserFiche, we use day in and day out for a lot of just general records management for the organization. So our minutes, ordinances, plan development permits, you name it, we put in there. We also have started to use it for a form system to track time off and leave requests for the village so we can get into less paper and more online. So this is a very robust program that we've, quite frankly, used very well, but it just scratched the surface. So there are vendors that can come in and help you implement even more things and analyze where your strengths and weaknesses are with that software. So we have some money set aside for that. And then the last part, as we talk about software programs, the fire department in the last couple years when dispatch upgraded the CAD system and the reporting system that goes along with CAD, We want to convert all the old fire reports from that old system essentially into the new system. So this would be the soft cost of making that transition. And then we can basically turn off the old reporting system, which was HTE. So that's what that is for. For which one? The last one? Or the first one?
The first
or
one.
The first one. Yeah, the first one, yeah, there would definitely be a training component to it. Yeah. I mean, the vision is to have all those, if not all of them, share close to all of them as online transactions that people don't necessarily even have to come into Village Hall to get permits. The big ones like a Chicago and Harlem and a Lake and Lathrop, those things are still going to come in on the big rolls and they're going to be reviewed, but all the point of sale transactions, all the things that the most residents can come in and pull, we want to get to a point where all that's done electronically and no one has to come in and pull paper and submit that stuff. They can scan it and send it right to Village Hall. Same thing on the inspection side of things and the management of that, how that ties into GIS, how that ties into the laser fiche. These are the programs. As the staff will tell you, I was always a proponent of putting all your eggs in one basket when it came to software. So instead of having five different programs and trying to get them all to talk to each other, find a Springbrook and say, okay, find something that does everything relatively well and go all in there and then try to and then implement all that. What we have found over time is that has not worked out too well, that various companies have gone in different directions and have gotten hyper-focused and have specialized in certain things. So the building permit software is a good component of it.
Are there integration issues with?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I assume that if you think about everybody else is trying to do this, I mean, all the municipalities, is there a best practice out there from other municipalities? Or did I miss that? Did you say that?
No, and that's part of what we're doing there. We're looking at the responses for the RFI right now to see what other companies are out there, what they're doing, who their references are, so we can go ahead and call those folks and get that information.
All right.
So I can't, there are best practices. I can't tell you, yep, as I sit here today what they are. And then the last item is computer replacements for police and fire. So this will each squad, frontline squad, and then also all of our major rigs for police and fire have computers in them, Panasonic Toughbooks. And one thing that has evolved, as you well know through the years in public safety, is squad cars especially have become little mobile offices for police officers and firefighters, and all their CAD information, records information, tie into leads and other databases, the camera system that we use for situational awareness. All those things are at the fingertips of a police officer or a firefighter, and so we need to make sure that those units, in terms of what you'll hear often termed as MDTs or mobile data terminals, are properly and properly functioning for the for our employees. And so this is one of those areas where, instead of spacing out over a period of time, at the request of our consultants and after reviewing best practices, it makes more sense to get the same computer, the same model with the same,
hardware,
thanks, John.
Yeah.
And basically then taking all, so it's all the same, and then taking the one computer and then mirroring it to each individual one. So one of the challenges we've had through the years is you're running one Panasonic on this Windows version, you're working one on another, and so we're trying to consolidate all that for an internal efficiency in what we all do.
Yeah, makes complete sense.
It's always good when your boss has worked for a software company.
Single image, that's what you
want. All right, moving on to, as we're running out of time a little bit, moving on to some of our capital that you'll see in the streets. We'll walk through some of these things here in a little bit. We've got the first two items, pretty standard street patching, 50-50 sidewalk, curb and gutter. Those are things we all do each and every year. We've got another alley improvement program set for those Thomas Street alleys that we had set aside previously. Those will be set for replacement next year. I think here in the spring, Jeff will be bringing you some bids for the other series of alleys that we'll go ahead and upgrade this year. Those will get done here in the spring. And then the parking lot in the East Thatcher lot is due for a resurfacing. SIP. Typically, each year we spend somewhere, $250, $350 in terms of our annual expense. We talked about that bond fund previously, and so one of the reasons we've upgraded and levied those dollars is to continue to reinvest in our street program. So we're essentially close to doubling what we spend in terms of street resurfacing, which is all good stuff. So right now, as you'll see in those lists, those are the tentative streets that will be resurfaced in this upcoming fiscal year.
With respect to that, I saw some around the schools. Can we make a hyper sensitive, effort to make sure that when we're tearing these up or somehow bidding these and prioritizing them, that we're not doing it during either the end of the school year or beginning of the school year, so that we don't have the resident issues that we had with Chicago Avenue.
Or better yet, maybe Carmella, just to be more sensitive to our communication plan
right.
during that period. Because I think, you're going to ask the folks, our administration to possibly spend more money.
Well, no, I'm just saying let's just be sensitive to maybe timing, but also even communication is not going to relieve the stress and anxiety. But if we can explain to them why this happened, why we're doing this, why the timing is what it is, and put extra, patrols around there or something.
Right. If I recall, in Chicago, the problem was more utilities than us. It was they had delayed, so they had pushed back.
No, it was. I mean, honestly, it was a combination of things. It was kind of the where the NSMP was the perfect storm of everything going right. The Chicago Avenue project was kind of the perfect storm of kind of everything going wrong.
But I think what we're saying is that there's just that when there's major projects like that, and we're not telling you anything you don't already know. So I think we're just saying be hypersensitive to
absolutely.
Kind of maybe that extra communication plan or. Just throw it out there.
Yep, absolutely. Yep. Some other items that we have set the street maintenance program. This is where we do a pavement preservation and rejuvenation of a street or series of streets. So we have a lump sum amount of money set aside for there. The traffic signal upgrade, if you recall, we've done the preliminary engineering to put in left turn signals at Chicago and Thatcher and Lake and Thatcher. Those are currently sitting at IDOT, and we're waiting for a reoccurring theme that you'll hear, waiting for those to be approved so we can go out to bid on those. And then the Safe Routes to School implementation, we'll talk about that tonight, but that's also put in there for an expense, and then the grant money that hopefully we would get from the state. We'll touch on water real quickly. Sewer lining and point repairs, again, these things work hand in hand. One of the things Jeff works on is the review of all the sewer televising and sewer tapes that not only that we have done or have a third party look at. And so we go to bid every year on the sewer lining, so we'll go ahead and do that next year. Occasionally there are the requirement of point repairs to fix areas where the sewer lining just won't make it work. So we'll go ahead and budget money for that. On the water distribution system, as you know, each year we look at various valves in the pump station and replacing those in terms of a best practice. So we have some money allocated for that. We do have money to clean and paint the water tower down on Forest so that, as you notice, it's starting to get a little dirty. Mm-hmm. That would be inspected by a third party. They would come in, drain it, go in there, take a look at it, and then go ahead and clean it and then paint it as well. And then that also covers the cost of any type of equipment that we would have to take down and reinstall. And then, as you know, we also replace water meters on an ongoing basis. Every 20 years, that's hopeful. Our hopeful useful life of a water meter, and so we have some of those also scheduled next year for replacement.
If we take down the water tower, will we still have water pressure?
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you do have the reservoirs up north, up north over at
the water tower. Will provide pressure.
It does in part. Correct.
What would the cost be to put our logo on the water tower?
We've talked about that a little bit in terms of an alternate when we go to do that work. That's something we'd bring to the board and see if you want to.
I don't know.
Identify it somehow. I mean, every water tower in every town has the name of the town for the most part. So I didn't know if that was something
I just think
kind of identifying.
You know, making it more noticeable is probably not what the residents.
Well, make it prettier if
well,
it's there.
Prettier would be take it down prettier. Altogether.
Yeah, well, you can't take do down the water towers.
We can find us something that would be pressurized without
we'll
using water towers.
How about the logo
can you
from
go
the flag?
To, huh?
The logo from the flag.
No, not that one.
Water main replacement. So we do have a water main, as we do each and every year, on the books for replacement. The hydrant replacements that we do based on feedback from the water department, the fire department, and then those deployable leak sensors that we had talked about previously. The technology to that, like everything, continues to evolve on a daily and weekly and monthly basis. So we've actually held off on that for the time being, because they've upgraded the back end of the phone networks to 4G. So we're waiting for that to be completed before we go ahead and make a purchase on that. So that may carry into next fiscal year. And that's it. So those are the main highlights of what we will be doing in fiscal year 2020. You can see all in terms of that funding, you're at about $3.5 million in costs for all the capital improvements that are proposed for next year.
Eric, is phase two of the Northside Sewer Project officially dead?
Dead's a strong word.
life support?
It's, when we went into it, we always said that, look, we want to see what phase one does, right? And I think, as I've always said, the phase one implementation and then all the work Elmwood Park has done has certainly taken the burden off of the phase two area. Certainly, if we ever got money, grant money, or something along those lines, we'd want to explore that. But phase one has certainly done a lot of work, not only for the phase one area, but then the phase two area. So I would never say it's dead. It's constructed, it's engineered, it's permitted. We could implement it if we want. If you get, quite frankly, because it is shovel ready, if there was ever a stimulus package or the federal government released funds for infrastructure, we can go and say, hey, this thing, because everyone says they're shovel ready and then they go to do the work and they're like, oh, well, I have to engineer it. And it's, you know, we would be ready to go with that.
How long would those permits stay open? Is that permits from the Water Reclamation District?
In part from them. I don't think there's any IDOT. Were there IDOT permits?
There would be no IDOT permits because we got the one on Harlem. I don't think that would be an issue. MWRD actually did close their window on the permits.
Okay.
So we would have to re-permit it through them. I don't think that would take a lot of time because it's right. The same thing they've already seen. The other one would be the IEPA, and I imagine at this point in time we would probably have to do the same thing with them, but I wouldn't anticipate that taking as long as a traditional review.
And all the utility work has been done too.
I did send it was a note from Senator Durbin's office that there are potential funding available, capital improvement funding available for shovel-ready projects. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and we were looking at that. I sent that off to Oak Park.
Oh, you did?
Take a look
for the viaduct.
But
it's going to be something
may be
for this.
That's a good point. We can go back.
No, it's not shovel-ready.
No.
It wasn't necessarily shovel-ready either.
We also talked about implementing parts of phase two as you resurfaced some of those north-south streets from Greenfield to Harlem.
Yep.
But there has definitely been a significant reduction in that North Avenue rain flow just because of
all the work.
Changes that were made on the Elmwood Park side as well. So it seems like it's,
Tom, don't forget, I mean, I know I don't think the viaduct is shovel ready, but there was a significant engineering study.
That was phase one,
right.
But they would still have to do a phase two. You'd probably be looking at another year of just engineering, I would bet, for something like that.
Still keep pushing for that.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
All right, any further comments or questions? If none, then we'll say thank you very much, Eric. Thank you. It was a very good presentation, very thorough. So we'll adjourn our special meeting to review the capital improvement plan. If I can get a motion to adjourn.
Move to adjourn.
Okay. You can say, I guess, all in favor.
Aye.
All in favor?
Aye. Okay. Hearing any nays, hearing no nays, we're adjourned.